Good evening. Thank you to the June 19th, 2019 meeting of the Public Works Advisory Board. All members of the board are present, so we have a quorum, and there are no announcements or presentations. We'll start off with public comment period. If there's any members of the audience wishing to make a comment on items that are not on the agenda, you may step forward now and make your comments. Seeing none, we'll move down to item A1, consent agenda, approval of the minutes of the May 29th, 2019 Public Works Advisory Board special meeting. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes as presented? Seeing none, go ahead.
I recommend a motion to approve the minutes as stated.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Jen, second it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed say nay. Motion carries unanimously. Business item B1, Director's Report. I'll let Rob introduce the item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members. This is a summary of activities for about the last month. A minor correction on page 13. We're talking about the Cloisters landscaping improvements. It's not on this agenda. It is an ongoing project where you heard that at your special meeting last time. And just so that everybody knows, there will be another public meeting so folks can provide more input into the plan. It is this Friday, late afternoon, 5:30 p.m. at the Cloisters Park. Pam Newman from our office will be there to go over the plan and to take public any comments that folks might have at that meeting. So, and I think she's had RSVPs from a half dozen people that want to come out there and talk about the plan. Update on the wastewater project briefly. I was up in Sacramento for a couple days, attended the state board meeting. Division of Finance, Financial Assistance, just approved their intended use plan, which authorized $105 million for the Morro Bay Water Reclamation Facility project, $100 million in loan, $5 million in grant money, and then the rest will be made up with our EPA WIFIA loan and cash on hand. So we can look forward to our, as you may recall, the water sewer rate surcharge was based on no SRF funding. Right. So we're going to bring our rate consultant back on board to crunch those numbers and see what we can reduce those rates down to. Speaking of rates, we do have a rate increase coming this summer. It's effective July 1st, and folks will see that in their August 1st bill. And it'll be a significant increase because it is the last year of the five-year increase that was imposed in 2015 and the first year of the WRF surcharge.
Can I ask Rob real quick on the SRF loan? Did they fix an interest rate at this point?
It's half of the GO bond rate. Currently, it's hovering somewhere around 1.2%.
So we'll be getting 1.2% or approximately.
It's when 1.2. We lock in that loan terms.
Oh, okay.
Their goal is to get agreement signed within 12 months of the state board authorization. We're a little ahead of the game because of the WIFIA process. They've already started reviewing. They have special environmental requirements because it's, even though it's money that comes from the state, it's actually federal dollars. So there's NEPA requirements that need to be met. And since EPA is already well into the NEPA The State Board is using the analysis that they've already done to start their environmental review.
But it's pretty well guaranteed that we're to get the loan, correct?
If we sign the loan agreement,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as we sign. Thank you.
Okay. I had a question on that. I've seen NEPA and CEQA kind of arguing about what's the proper way to do things. Is there a chance that CEQA might get in the way of NEPA?
No, our CEQA document is approved, and when we did our CEQA analysis, we did what's known as CEQA Plus. It did all the analysis required by CEQA and NEPA, so we provided the analysis. We will be supplementing that work with some details that the EPA wanted us to take a look at historic properties that might be along the road and at the site. There really are no historic properties that we'll be affecting, so that's a pretty easy box to check, but it's a box that we had to check through our State Historic Preservation Office who provides that response.
Thank you.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
Is any insight, Rob, on how it went from no expectation of SRF to $105 million, which is about 80%, 90% of the total?
Sure. So when we did the rate analysis, we couldn't guarantee that we would get an SRF loan because we were just starting on the application process. They made the initial cut scores this last spring, and it came to their board yesterday. So we had to assume that we would be using more conventional financing for the portion that was not covered by cash and WIFIA.
Do you remember exactly what percentage you used when you weren't assured the SRF loan? Any idea? Is it like 4 or 5%?
About 4% for conventional bonds.
I was just wondering the
bond financing.
Sorry, I didn't.
It's going to be about a 10% drop in that surcharge.
Oh. Okay.
Maybe a little bit more than that.
Jan, I think you also had a question there.
Oh, mine was just housekeeping. What is CEQA and NEPA?
CEQA is the California Environmental Quality Act. It's a process to disclose impacts of a project. So we went through an EIR, Environmental Impact Report, for the project. Council certified that EIR last summer. NEPA is National Environmental Policy Act. It's kind of the national equivalent of CEQA.
Okay.
And as I stated, these are disclosure documents. And typically, if there is an impact, there would be some mitigation required.
Okay. Any more highlights before we open it up to the board?
No, I think that covers the items that I wanted to highlight.
Okay. If you have any questions, would you please refer to the page number that you're questioning? Christian, we'll start down with you. How's that?
Not at this time.
Okay. Steve?
Neither do I, actually.
Jan?
No.
All right, Tori?
Well.
Okay.
I just had a couple of sort of informational questions about, two, I guess. One has to do with the wastewater treatment discussion. Page 10 of 26, the fog issues, fats, oils, and greases. I'm just wondering if, is that a big problem here? Has there been any vendors who might look at, are there any ordinances around what restaurants must do with disposing of greases and things like that?
Luckily, we have a couple of experts on our fog programs here tonight. So we require annual inspection, and we do have regulation in our code, and I'll let Demare.
There is regulation in the code, and the fog program inspects restaurants and what other facilities? Any facility that, industrial type facilities once a year. They go out and do an inspection, and they make sure that the grease is being cleaned and taken away every so 2 weeks or so often.
And we'll be getting into more of that detail when we get into the report tonight.
Yeah, the FOG program is part of the sewer system management plan.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I should just...
Yeah, maybe focus on it at that point.
Okay. Yeah. And same with the water quality report. Get into that later. Or that was the other area of my questioning, too. Just
No, you can... That's
on part of the director's report here. Yeah.
Okay, that was, page 20 of 26. Well, another question. There's just on the. There was a mention on page 11 of 26 of a digester process, and I'm just wondering: is there any compost materials that come out of that digester process?
So our digester produces Class B solids, which are hauled to. So they don't meet.
They're not. Compost.
They're not compost at all.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So they're hauled. We have a contract to haul them to Liberty Farms in Kern County that has a composting operation. They mix with green waste and they compost on site.
Okay. Thanks.
Go ahead, Jan.
Just related to what Tori said. Is that the sludge that he was talking about, the composting, is that going to be taken care of? Will we still have to haul it away when we have our new facility, or will that be?
Yes, we'll haul solids from the new facility.
The solids will still be?
Yeah. So the process that we'll be using, membrane bioreactor, does not lend itself well to digestion. There's... a lot of volatile solids reduction in the process, so there's not much food that's left to digest. It's really a fairly stable product when it comes out of the MBR. It's not ready to land apply, but it doesn't really digest much more. So we would probably to digest that, maybe need to add a food source to that, and likely have to have primary clarifiers to have digesters work, which are not proposed in this process.
So what does the facility do with it that you, the facility that we haul it to, do they do add food
they
products?
They would compost it, so they would add, likely mix it with green waste and windrow it, and compost it that way.
So there's not just one big pile of it out there.
There's a long pile of it. A windrow of it. So kind of a triangle-shaped pile that gets turned on occasion.
Rob, it looks like we check Mission Linn frequently, I would imagine, because of the type of business they're in. Do we keep track of that in a graph? You know, last month they were at this level, and now they're at a pH of 6 or pH of 9 or whatever it is.
They're responsible for monitoring their pH. We don't have a regular monitoring program with them. Maybe Robbie can...
We just kind of go out there sporadically. You know, we don't tell them, hey, we're going to be here on a weekly basis. We just go out, you know, every week or so. So nothing's in the norm. Just check them in the morning, and then as a graph, we can produce a graph. We keep records of it all as a chain of custody.
Okay. Tori, back to you. Do you still have any more questions?
The only other things that a question would be from the water quality report. The page 20 of 26. Where it's just that the talking about the two nitrate and selenium in the well water, both of them exceed the maximum contaminant level. in Wellwater. Any comments about that, or is that something to be concerned about, or does that just seem normal?
Our wells in the Moro Valley that this is coming from they do exceed in nitrates. That's why that water is always run through the brackish water reverse osmosis. So this is raw water. This isn't the water that you're actually getting in the distribution system. The same thing for selenium. But the selenium was above, and it's only tested every 3 years, so we have tested it since, and it's been below. If we get 4 tests after it's been above, below, then we go back to every 3 years. So and we're looking into why it did test high this last time.
So these tests for the well water are recent or not?
Yeah, they were done this last year in 2018.
And they don't? The well water does not go into the drinking system? Or
not directly.
It's the raw water they're bringing up. Then they run it through an RO system.
Okay, so that's where before it enters the TDF.
And also, I mean, 90% of the water that you're receiving is state water, which water is non-detectant selenium.
Right, right. Okay.
All right, John?
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tori, were you finished?
Yeah, finished.
Okay, John?
All right, I got a few questions. These monthly work orders completed, this is on page 4. It says general core duties. What do you include in those?
General core duties is the restrooms get cleaned regularly throughout the day, toilet paper gets replaced, litter gets picked up, trash cans get emptied. Those are typical regular core duties.
Okay. Then I was looking at page 5. Where's Bayshore Bluffs? Is that the one kind of at the end of, what is it, Market Street or whatever on the south end? Or?
Yeah, Bayshore Bluffs is the park that's in the condo complex right on the curve of Main Street, just as you kind of exit state parks headed north-ish bound.
It overlooks Tidelands Park, correct?
No, that's...
Oh, I thought that was...
That's Franklin Riley Park.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Bayshore Bluffs Park is south of there.
Oh, okay.
It's where the bird sanctuary is.
Near, yes, there's a heron rookery, there.
Is it north or south of the rookery?
I believe it's north.
Okay.
Yeah, as you go down Main Street, you hit the curve and you go around this condo complex. Well, if you enter the condo complex, it's Bayshore Bluffs right there between the inn at Morro Bay and that part of Main Street.
I think it's Sandpiper Lane is the street name that goes into that Bayshore condo complex. Mm-hmm. And if you take the most northerly entrance in, you go directly to the park. Mm-hmm. And there's a walkway that goes down to the bay from there, an overlook area,
okay.
Restrooms, a small lawn, and some landscaping there.
Okay. Is the Rocky Teen Center that area with a skate park next to the high school?
Yes, the Rockies is that, and there's it used to be a miniature golf course there.
And when is the fence going to be permanently fixed?
It's on our work order to do. I couldn't give you the date.
But it's not going to be 2 years from now.
Then. No.
Okay. Page 9, stormwater. Is this small pocket park? I'm not quite sure where this is. Is that kind of like near that Bayshore Bluff? Or
it's below Franklin Riley Park on Moro Cove. It's just north of the boat rent station.
Okay, that's what kind of I thought.
And actually next month when we do our tour with the Recreation and Parks, we will go visit this and kind of get a better idea of it actually out in the field.
Okay.
Is it in that parking lot adjacent to 456?
Yes, it's at the end of that parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Page 11. Oh, you answered that. Never mind. Mm-hmm. You take it to Liberty Farms. I was wondering where you took the sludge to, and Liberty Farms is the answer. You said, forget where I saw that. That is, you were talking about digesters and a little bit of sludge, and I said, okay, where does the sludge from the digester go? I was just curious, and you answered it.
I'll give you a little more information. Comes out of the digesters to sludge drying beds, mm-hmm. For additional dewatering, because it's cheaper to haul dry material than it is wet material. And we do about a twice a year, 10 truckloads full to Liberty Farms.
Okay, page 13. You kind of briefly said the options for Highway 41, Main Street, Highway 1 intersection was either the traffic circle or a traffic signals. Are there any other options involved with this is page 13 with that intersection?
Well, we'll have to look at the no project option as part of the environmental review for that project. But the we've gone through the intersection control evaluation with Caltrans, both phases of it. The recommended alternative is the roundabout, although that's the most expensive. Signalization would be likely not recommended because of the life of the signal. A signalized intersection, and when it goes to basically level F in 20 years, so it doesn't have a long design life there.
Okay, and so next, collection system repairs. This looks like it's kind of related to your sanitary sewer management plan. What's pipe bursting?
Basically pig is a mandrel or is pulled through a pipe. Mm-hmm. It's burst and a pipe is pulled back behind it. It's used if you need to, for example, increase a pipe diameter from a 6-inch to an 8-inch pipe. You couldn't go much more than one pipe diameter when you're doing pipe bursting.
Okay, so it's a way to
upsize a pipe, but you can't. It has its limitations.
Because it's buried in the ground.
Yes.
Okay. Page 14. I was wondering how many active projects are in the town for remodels and construction.
That's something we're going to have to report back to you, and we can provide that information on future director's report.
What sort of staff effort have you been putting in towards these?
We pretty much spend two full-time members probably spending between the two of them a day on development review for all of our projects in the queue. So we're looking at various projects every day.
So you got two people reviewing projects?
Yes.
All the time. Based on my conversations with my friends and stuff, I've seen drainage issues kind of sneak through the planning review there. How often do you guys see drainage issues when you see these building permits?
So the part of the building permit requires a grading plan. We review the grading plan, and then it gets inspected by the building inspector and during construction and finaled by Public Works.
So do they kind of take a look at the effect of the development on adjacent parcels when they do their review?
Yes.
Okay, or at least they're supposed to.
They're supposed to, yes.
Okay. I was wondering about that. Is there a process where you kind of lay out what a plan review entails, or is this the hard way where they, like I went through, they said, here, John, you figure it out?
No, we have a checklist that to basically remind the plan checker where what areas need to be looked at.
Could you provide a copy of that? I'm not going to be, not in July, but maybe in August, provide a copy of their checklist.
Sure.
I'd like to see it, just to see what you've got in there. I used to be hell on wheels for that stuff.
And as far as draining onto other properties, so in the West, water is the common enemy. And you're allowed to, as long as you don't change the quantity or concentrate the water, still drain onto your neighbor. So some of the techniques that are used are, for example, you're on a slope site, you're below the street, mm-hmm. water's going to flow downhill, but you might need to do a level spreader in the back to replicate sheet flow.
Okay, well, yeah, and like I say, I was just sort of curious to see what
yeah.
sort of things are listed there. Then I took a look at Council Agenda C1 for page 15. Do you think, you know, if you say like a little bullet list of the issues that you discussed in that might be handy rather than for me to go get into the computer and get into the website and get into the and see what's there. Just a little bullet list of the
sure.
See if there's anything interesting there. And there was a preferred alternatives in listing of the transportation, and I was wondering what sort of O&M impacts are identified in the study there. I took a look and nothing really jumped out in the really brief skimming I did.
For the transit center?
No, for it was for the WRFCAC. There was a discussion of being how you were going to pump the
The conveyance system. So we looked at several alternatives. The option that was selected by council as the alternative is the recommended alternative. I'll go through that one first and then talk a little bit about some of the other and their fatal flaws. The recommended alternative is leaving there will be a new pump station at the existing corporation yard about where the park shed is. Adjacent to the desal plant. That'll be a pump station. It'll pump east on Atascadero Road to the Highway 1 southbound on-ramp, go up the shoulder of the ramp until we hit the weave lane, and then cross back onto the bike path easement. A weave lane is where you have people getting off and on the freeway at the same time, and they kind of weave as. We'll cross Morrow Creek with a pipe bridge. That portion that's within the Caltrans right of way will be encased in a carrier pipe, probably a 54-inch diameter pipe, because there'll be four. Pipelines.
So you're putting all four pipes in the same carrier?
That's what we will do. We're still working with Division of Drinking Water to make that happen.
Oh, okay.
We may need two. Go back onto the bike path. Follow the bike path to the intersection of Quintana and Main Street. Cross Main Street. There will be a second lift station at the city-owned lot adjacent to Limos. It's kind of a misshapen, triangular-shaped lot there. Looks like a parking lot that nobody really ever uses because there's...
Is that the one with the for sale sign?
Yes, there's
right?
A, okay, the city was looking at selling it. And,
I was wondering where that was going. Okay.
The general fund will sell that to the enterprise fund. So the city will sell that. That secondary pump station will receive direct flows from that part of the community that can gravity to it, so we're not sending everything to the old wastewater treatment plant location then pumping everything back, which was kind of the original facilities master plan. Also, our lift station number 2 on Embarcadero will pump almost directly to that lift station, so we'll be intercepting that flow also. We'll probably break it to gravity before we go into that pump station.
Which is pump station 2?
Pump station 2 is an existing pump station on the Embarcadero near the Maritime Museum.
Okay.
And we have a sewer easement that cuts through the power plant property. We'll be using that to get the wastewater over there. From that location, it'll continue on Quintana all the way to the roundabout, and then a horizontal directional drill will take it under the roundabout location. We'll come back up to open cutting kind of behind Morro Bay Coffee Company, and then it'll be open cut all the way down to South Bay Boulevard, taking a left on South Bay Boulevard, under the structure, Caltrans's structure there, proposing to open cut there, and our design engineers think they can get a piece of equipment under there to do that work. And Caltrans will allow an open cut there if we can do it without damaging their structure. And then from there, it'll go directly into the site, which is about a quarter mile from that. Northeasterly from that intersection. That pipeline routing will have 4 pipelines in it. So it'll have 2 sewer force mains, one that will be used during normal to low flows. For high flows, we'll need to use both of those, and it allows us the ability to alternate those force mains for maintenance purposes. So when we're pigging one, we can still pump.
Well, the other two, you explained two, but
yeah,
not the other.
Yeah, so pigging, I'm sorry, oh. I had to cough there. Oh, pigging is the cleaning of pipelines. The other two lines, it will have a wet weather / brine line, which will go out to the outfall. So during times where we're producing highly purified water, we'll have a brine product that will go out the ocean outfall. During wet weather conditions when we're likely not injecting that water into the ground and we have a lot of water due to INI, that'll be used. And then the fourth line is our purified water line that will take water to the injection sites and inject that into the ground.
Okay. I was kind of curious. I know there'd be like maintenance issues with the pump stations. Will the force mains have any additional maintenance and operating and maintenance costs besides the pump station itself?
All equipment has a life to it, so mm-hmm. there'll be repairs and replacement throughout its life.
And that's been estimated for the.
Yeah, we have an ongoing estimated operating cost for those facilities, and it was included in the rate calculations. A few of the other alternatives we looked at were coming down the Embarcadero, crossing with a pipe bridge over Morro Creek, and then down the Embarcadero or our Embarcadero / Front Street to Pacific, up Pacific, which would require the acquisition of one piece of property at the end of Pacific, and then going down to Quintana. That was the next least costly option. Going on the east side of the highway, there was 3 alternatives that were looked at. One that kind of went up through the Harborfront Tract or Radcliffe neighborhood and kind of directly there, an open cut option, hit a high point there and was brought the pumping technically infeasible to do because of the high head required to pump over that point. We also looked at a long directional drill, which would have been a really cool project, probably the only one in the U.S. to drill 6,000 feet with 270 feet of overburden. But it was really infeasible cost-wise, and we really don't want to be the only place in the U.S. that would do something like this. And then kind of paralleling the freeway to the site, we had there was too many waters of the U.S. to cross, the ephemeral streams there, and each one of those required a horizontal directional drill to not impact the waters of the U.S., which added substantial cost to the project.
Now, I saw in that description, or fatal flaws, quite often there was a discussion about crossing Morro Creek. So was Morro Creek, crossing Morro Creek considered a fatal flaw, or was it just everything?
Crossing Morro Creek east of the highway was considered a fatal flaw. There's not room between the two structures, between the city's bridge and the Caltrans bridge. They have spread footings there to build either another pipe bridge or to do a bore. Plus the NMFS, or National Marine Fisheries Service, is concerned with frack out or drilling fluids leaking from the drilling operation that would drill that pipe under into the creek. So they would likely not allow a directional drill under the creek there.
Okay. And there was something else, and I didn't make a good note, so I can't ask that question. Let's see, was there anything else I had? Page, see if I can figure out what page this was. It would have been 21. Oh, there it is. Two methyl isoboronyl, that's the odor caused by green algae. Is that right? You might have.
No, I believe that's a different methyl. Do you remember the name of that one, Rob?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
How do you say that name anyway?
I don't.
Okay, because when I Googled it, it came up as the green algae.
Maybe there's two names for it then, because...
Well, there's... it'll come to me in a moment if I don't think about it too hard. Geosmin is the other odor taste-producing byproduct that we get in state water, usually during the late summer, early fall, that gives that pleasant dirt taste to the water.
And is that caused by an algae, too?
That is caused by an algae also.
Okay.
And the Polonial Pass water treatment plant has a granulated activated carbon operation there now to reduce that that taste.
And then from my personal experience, hexavalent chromium is quite common in Portland cement concrete. So when water is in contact with that, it will leach it out sometimes. So,
and we do have chrome mines in this area, old chrome mines in this area.
I had a project at one. So, yes, I know. Okay, and then so everything else is in sewer system management plan, so I'll pass it on to Stuart.
Go, Stuart.
Good evening, Rob.
How you doing?
On page 10, let's see, the second line down here says man lift station during two-hour PG&E scheduled power outage. When PG&E goes out of power, We don't have a lift station then, do we? Do we store the effluent someplace, or what do we do with it when the power's off? Or is there a backup battery there, or what happens?
Backup generators. We have at all of our lift station sites, so that will have automatic switching capabilities to start up and run.
Okay, so they all have the ability to keep the lines pressurized so we don't have stuff all over the place and so on.
Yes, and we're working on for a small, what you might consider private lift station at the Rock parking lot. We had a power outage there. Our consolidated maintenance that maintains that did not get a call out. We talked about this last time a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we're working on an alarm system for that so that we will know when we lose power that we need to go down there and close the Rock restroom.
Okay. Where I'm from, we had a lift station go out at the American River that cost the city almost $1 million. And I forget what the number of gallons was, but it wasn't a whole lot. And
about $3,000 a gallon,
yeah,
is the minimum mandatory penalties.
It was a lot. And still on page 10, on-call staff received two-hour call out, lift station 3 power outage. And here again, I imagine there's a backup generator to keep it going, unless there's something wrong with the mechanism in it, or something wrong with the relay in the lift station. What happened there?
I'll let Robbie talk a little about that.
So one of the calls was another power outage. I think it was almost citywide, if I remember right. And then the next call was a mainline blockage. So, when the lift stations go out of power, we get a call almost immediately. The generators kick on almost immediately, and then we make sure that it is continuing to pump at its normal speed and everything like that, and that its normal operation is.
So if the power goes out, then you've got a backup generator there. If the pump doesn't work, then somebody's summoned right away, and we bring another pump out there to install.
Somebody's summoned right away when it switches over to generator power, too, because we want to be out there making sure everything is working properly.
Yeah.
Good. All right. So there, state of California, we can do it. Let's see, on page 11, we've got respond to a one-hour call-out for plant chlorine adjustment. That's something that we call somebody on when the plant chlorine gets out of a given range. What's the range that we try to keep the chlorine in?
I don't have that information, but there's a lot of instrumentation drift with these old chlorine monitors that we have there. Because of changes in flow rate. So that's probably the majority of our call-outs, I think, at the plant is chlorine alarms, because we can't have too little chlorine for disinfection, and we can't have too much chlorine because we can't put chlorinated effluent into the ocean. We have to dechlorinate that. So we get a lot of instrumentation drift, so the signal will be drifting while we're applying the right amount of chlorine. The instrumentation is old and doesn't settle down with changes in flow as quickly as we would like.
Okay,
so we'll get a call out.
Occasionally I can smell chlorine in our kitchen sink when I'm running the faucet. That's probably what's
cool.
Hopefully you're not smelling the chlorine from the wastewater plant through your kitchen sink.
Not wastewater, water.
It typically, when you smell that chlorine, is when we're switching from, most of the time the city disinfects with chloramines. When we go off of state water, we will switch to free chlorine. So we're using sodium hypochlorite without the ammonia addition to disinfect our system. And you'll, during that switchover is typically when you get that odor.
And the state water's all chloramine.
Yes, state water's all chloramine, so that's why we need to do chloramine here.
Right.
Okay. Congratulations to Dane Ludley and Landon Mornor, who passed the wastewater treatment operation grade 3 exam. Wow. That's a lot of paperwork. I saw what it looks like in good grief. So congratulations, guys.
And that helps us with our kind of revisioning of the utilities department, going from operators that specialized in maybe one area to multi-cert operators that can both work in water and wastewater.
I was wondering why there was a lot of the grade operators going through at the same time, especially the one going from one to two. I was wondering if you had a turnover in staff recently, but you're basically taking them from wastewater to water operation and certificate.
Yeah,
to match.
Ideally, our operations staff, until you get to like a level like Rob is at, where he's focusing, he's a lead person focusing mainly on wastewater.
Mm-hmm.
The more junior level staff have the ability to work both in water and wastewater.
But it's still wastewater treatment's the toughest part of it, isn't it? Still, as far
depends
as grade
who you
operation.
Ask.
Oh, okay.
I think the LS is the hardest.
Well, I didn't need that.
Okay, on page 13, down at the bottom, there's a long hyperlink. I tried to get that to work, and it never would work. Is there something wrong with it? Or it might be a good idea to take these hyperlinks and maybe condense them down a little bit, make sure they work, and condense them down and put a shorter link in there, because that's very difficult to copy and take a look at it to see what's going on with that.
You know, it worked in the native document, but it's not working when it was converted to a PDF. So we'll have to figure out. So you'd have to either retype that in or cut and paste, copy and paste it into.
Yeah, I tried doing that, but that's okay. So I see.
Yeah, it's not.
And let's go on to page 14. Sonic Restaurant. I spent some time calling Sonic Restaurant and talked to a bunch of people over there, and we finally got back to marketing. And we've got the plan check going on, and I guess we approved it and so on, but it appears they're not going to build anything there right now. That they're looking for somebody to come in and pony up the money to get started on it. Is that what's going on?
Well, you know more than we do.
Yeah, you can chase
down. We're waiting for the resubmittal.
Yeah, there's three or four different phone numbers that I called there to see what was going on with Sonic. On page 15, we've got a Coastal Commission consolidated permit hearing tentatively scheduled for July 9th, 10th, and 11th. Is that something that we should show up for, or what do you recommend there? Mr. Leibig.
It's up to you. So it's a open public hearing that the Coastal Commission will be taking action on the water reclamation facility project in total. So the consolidated permit is because a portion of the project is in the county, a portion is in the city jurisdiction, and a portion is in original jurisdiction, rather than having three separate hearings. Coastal staff, county staff, and our planning staff thought it would be most efficient use of public resources to, it would likely get to Coastal Commission anyway, to hear it at one hearing. So that will take, it's going to be in San Luis Obispo at the Embassy Suites, and we'll have, as soon as we have the exact date and time for that hearing item, we'll post it to the website. So it'll be one of those days. It won't be all three of them.
Okay, great. Yeah, and we can hold our finger on their pulse and see what they're doing and why they're not doing. And that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. I only have one little question. Back on page 9 on the stormwater basin, on the map there, what's the depth and the material that's used in the basin bottom?
I will have more of that next month, but okay. The depth is not very deep. It's only like a 3-to-1 slope, so there's no fence required around it. And then the material is a special bioretention type material. This was the preliminary design. They're working on the final design on it right now. So okay. Next month when we go out, I'm hoping to have a little more to provide that stuff for you.
Great. Thank you. And were there any additional questions down the line here that we passed? It looks like Jan has something.
I have one. On that same one, Damaris. This is being built by a grant. Why was this chosen? Was this because of it says the stormwater rain garden to treat the runoff? Was that the primary purpose of this? That there was.
We're a party to this grant with another city, mm-hmm. And the construction part of the grant was a very small grant, so it couldn't be a very big project. The other part of the grant is much larger, but it's a planning grant. And it's in the city of Salinas. This was chosen because this was an area that the city actually got a stormwater violation. At one point, we had the water board come do an audit, and when we were walking around the different sites, there was a boat rinsing off with some soapy substance, and it goes straight into the bay. So that becomes an illicit discharge. So it's an area that we've wanted to treat and fix for a while, but we just never have had the funds, so this came about and we took advantage of it.
Okay, thank you. I was just wondering why that particular spot was chosen. Thank you very much.
Okay, any other last questions before we move on? Thank you, staff and Rob and everyone, for always a very informative report. The next item on the agenda is the recertification of the update of the sewer management plan. And when my partner Lisa asked what's on the agenda this month, I said the SSMP, and she goes, oh boy, that should be very interesting. And the report was. So it looks like Joe was going to be doing
Joe
that.
Joe is at a training on advanced wastewater treatment. We're going to turn it over to Damaris, who's going to pinch, and Robbie Victor is going to pinch hit for Joe.
What we'll do is we'll let you guys give the report, and then we'll open it up to the public if anyone wants to speak on it, and then we'll open it up to the board. How does that sound with everyone?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Take it away.
All right, thank you. So tonight we are bringing the recertification of the sewer system management plan. The city currently has a waste discharge requirement with the State Water Resources Control Board. This permit is required for all wastewater collection systems that have over 1 mile of pipeline. this permit requires the city to develop a sewer system management plan, or an SSMP, and recertify that every 5 years. The purpose of the SSMP is to reduce the number and the severity of sanitary sewer overflows. The SSMP has 11 major components, ranging in complexity from goals and emission statement to performing a complete collection system capacity assessment. This is the third SSMP for Morro Bay. The first was certified in 2019, the second in 2014, and now this one in 2019. The waste discharge requirement also requires the city to produce or conduct periodic internal audits at a minimum every 2 years. These audits focus on evaluating the effectiveness of the SSMP and the city's compliance with the SSMP regulations, including identifying any deficiencies in the SSMP and steps to improve them and correct them. The major changes from 2014 to 2019 are mostly covered in elements 4, 7, and 8. Element 4 is operation and maintenance. Major changes are that the city now conducts our own CCTV of the sewer mains. Previously, the city contracted that type of work out, and also integrating City Works into the daily work order systems. Element 7 is fog control, or fats, oil, and greases. This program was updated in the 2019 SSMP to reflect the new digital format of the inspections. Previously, when they did the inspections, they had a site book. It would be handwritten out. A copy was given to them. Now it's all digital. They can the owner or contractor can sign it, and they email it right to them, so they have the copy of that record for themselves. And also, the fog inspections have been integrated into CityWorks to track and schedule upcoming visits. Element 8 is the System Evaluation and Capacity Assurance Plan. The previous 2014 SSMP reflected on the 2006 Sewer Master Plan. So this update has now been reflected to the revised Sewer Master Plan, which is contained within the One Water Plan. Overall, the SSMP meets the requirements and the intent of the waste discharge requirements. It contains the elements and programs that have been field tested and refined through the work practices in the field. The effectiveness of the SSMP is demonstrated by the reduction and lack of sewer system overflows in the city's collection system. Therefore, the staff recommends Public Works Advisory Board recommend to City Council recertification of the 2019 SSMP. And we're here to help answer any questions.
Okay. I'll go ahead and open it up to the public and let them make any comments, if they like. And it doesn't look like anyone's stepping forward, so I'll open it up to the board now. And we'll start on the opposite side. So, Stu, are you ready to lead off?
Would I like to give an introduction? Not really. There's a lot of information in here, and, of course, it's been consolidated over a period of many years, hasn't it? And we enhance and then develop it as we go along and explain what's happening, where we're getting our information from, and so on. We've set some goals here in the meantime, obviously, it states. And we've gone through and done, actually, I think, a great job of this. It's laid out quite well so that a normal person can sit down and take a look at it and read it without being an engineer, and which is good stuff. The notification for spills and those other things seem to be addressed in it. Of course, only time will tell if we're right on with that, but I would imagine that we're going to, and this is a question for Rob, we're going to be putting in new pumps and new mechanisms to pump things here and there as we go along when we update our system. Is that correct? We're not going to use any of the old systems we've got.
We will use our existing collection system as kind of the backbone to the new wharf project. So, like I stated in kind of the conveyance system, instead of pumping getting everything to flow down to the existing plant site and pumping it back, we're going to intercept that those sewer sheds as high up as we can, so we don't have to double the pumping. So lift station 2 will continue to be used. Lift station 1, which is in the cloisters, will continue to pump. Lift station 3, which is at the corner of Quintana and South Bay, will be basically turned around, and instead of pumping back into town, will pump directly to the plant. So we'll use that existing infrastructure. I think, fortunately, all three of those lift stations within the past 4 years have either been replaced or completely rebuilt, and have had modern features integrated into them, modern sensing, SCADA systems, telemetry, so that we have the ability, once we fully integrate our SCADA plan, to monitor those operations, so we know in detail, which pump has the overvoltage issue and which leg of the three phase is the problem. So as we move forward with the WRF project, we're going to enhance the technology that we're using to monitor these systems.
Great. So I would imagine we've identified the old equipment that we have, and we have a, a handle on which ones we want to replace as we move down the road. And obviously the Cloisters has got some newer equipment in it and so on. I'd imagine that equipment has some different, the old equipment is not as efficient as newer equipment out. Is that true?
For the most part, yes, that is true. Just want to point out both those other two lift stations, the existing ones, lift station 3 on the Embarcadero, that was completely rebuilt 3 years ago, somewhere in there, 2012, so a little bit longer than that ago. And then lift station 3 was also completely rebuilt. So those are both fairly new facilities now.
Okay, so we're tracking those, and we know how much amperage they're drawing and so on, so we can, if an alarm goes off or if they look like they're getting outside of the range, of the operational range of that particular pump or that particular lift station, we know that in advance, don't we?
For the most part, yes.
Good.
And also, if you would identify any page if you have specific questions about the report.
I'm just kind of winging it through here. There's,
okay.
There's a lot of this. I know we had some conversation about putting in some large solar cells to power some of this equipment. And is that part of our plan, or are we thinking about that, or what's happening with that?
That's likely a future phase of the project. It's not currently in the design build. It didn't make sense for us to build and own that. We would likely do an RFP after startup. It's included in our environmental document and will be included in our coastal development permit for likely a purchase power agreement. And we've talked to several solar representatives from, for example, like Rec Solar regarding the ability to participate in a project like that.
Good. I don't know. I'm not going to go through every page in this. There's
well, it was a matter of if you have questions, having read it prior. So,
and I'm okay. I'm okay with what I've got here. And there's a lot to assimilate here. And in 2 or 3 days, it's difficult to do all of that.
Okay.
But we're going to keep this document for a little while, right?
5 years.
I mean, yeah. Us.
I think they wanted the copies back.
If you have no use for them, we would take the copies back. If you want to keep them, you feel free to keep the copies.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Good. That's what I have.
All right. John?
Okay. I appreciate your little email listing how the revisions were worked out because it helped me focus what I look at rather than everything from the beginning. I'm assuming that there was some sort of view when the document was first put together. Let's see. One of the questions I've got is on your CCTV inspection. How much of the system has currently been inspected?
In 2008 to about 2011, we had about 90%, 95% of the city videoed.
Mm-hmm.
In our document, we state about every 5 years it needs to be revideoed, and we are currently starting to start videoing the whole town.
So you've just started. When did you restart the process?
About a year ago when we got the camera.
So you're about 20% done then?
It's kind of a give and take between line cleaning, you know, keeping the water or the sewer in the pipes and videoing and other projects that crop up.
Okay. So you've started over, you're say 20% plus or minus. That was still element 4. Element 5, you had. How do you monitor your pressure mains to make sure there's no issues with them?
Element 5, that's design and performance.
Yeah.
for the force mains, we typically keep an eye on the amperage at the stations on our checks 2-3 times a week. If we notice anything out of the normal for amperage, there's either A, there's something going on with the pump, or B, if all the pumps are about the same amperage that's out of normal, there could be something going on with the check valves or anything upstream. So,
do you ever have problems with the pipe itself?
No, not with the pipes. Everything's fairly new.
Okay.
And C900 PVC is on the newer force mains, what they were constructed from.
So that's quite stable then?
Yes.
Okay. And then, is there a similar report which you do for the sewage treatment plant, or is this kind of like a one-off thing to meet your water discharge requirement?
We do an annual report for the wastewater treatment plant that gives performance, water quality data, and we submit that to the regional board. And there's no requirement in that regulation that it come to council for approval, so we post that to the website. And so we have several years' worth of annual reports for the wastewater treatment plant. They have a very good history section in there, too, about, you know, how the plant has performed over the years.
And then I guess the other question is part of the purpose of this is to provide some information for the city workers, and so they know what standards they're supposed to be looking for, or is it primarily for the FOG that they use this manual?
This document's mainly for the workers as a guide.
So anything this touches on, it kind of, is there like a manual or operating manual for the waste treatment plant, or which the workers would use as a guide for whatever they do, or is it a different kind of process?
It's kind of a different kind of process. All the unit operations have the manufacturer's kind of instructions on how to operate and the maintenance. But the operation of a wastewater treatment plant, since it involves so many different unit processes, you're part biologist, part mechanic, and part electrician at a wastewater treatment plant.
Okay, so it sounds like there really isn't like an operating manual for the workers, except what's been provided by the manufacturers.
And there's standard operating procedures for example, when you bring up and down different unit processes, what you need to do to keep the plant operating optimally, because you can kill off the biology if you're not operating it correctly. If our current plant is a trickling filter plant, which a fixed film bioreactor. So the wastewater gets settled in primary sedimentation tanks, and then that overflow runs over, comes out of a turntable and trickles over the rocks, and there's biology that grows on those rocks that eats the food in the wastewater. If you let that dry out,
was it 2 years?
It is hell to get the organisms back living again and get adequate treatment.
Okay. Let's see. The FOG. I was kind of reading a little bit about the FOG. There's an application process, and there's a monitoring process. Is that how does a business do the application? They get caught, or is it part of the permit process, or if you see something happening, you go figure out who it is?
It's part of the business license.
Yeah, it actually starts at the business license. So we see what type of business is out there, what they may produce out there, and so they get pulled in that way. And then we go out and visit them the first time and
And so you let them say, okay, maybe a trap will work, or if not, if the trap doesn't work, you have them upgrade to an interceptor?
The building code really regulates kind of what they have to put in there, as far as I understand, and the size of it and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. Let's see. I guess the monitoring is random, periodic, but it's on a random basis.
There's one individual who's kind of focuses that, and he goes out to visits all of them once a year, but it's random. They don't know he's coming, kind of thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then last thing, element 8, your system evaluation capacity assurance plan, which I guess is where this gets plugged into the capital improvement plan. Is that right?
Yes. We ran a complete sewer system model when we updated our capital improvement plan to many of those projects were based on that modeling effort, calibrated modeling effort, as we had flow monitoring installed in the system.
And then for funding, this is also where you would identify funding which is required for the system, is that right?
Yes, and the funding for this comes from rates.
Okay. Oh, I remember there was one other question I had for element 4, and that was, let's see if I can get back to it. So you do the CCT inspection and you identify an issue. Is there a process you follow when you determine whether it's cost effective to repair and replace, or just allow it to go on?
Pretty much what the process is. If we determine that the pipe is in type of a shape that needs replaced or fixed, we'll make a write-up and send that to engineering. And from there, it'll either be a capital improvement project or an in-house small repair.
Well, what sort of things will trigger this maintenance? I understand that there are several crush lines out there at the off of Sandalwood and Coral Head area. Is there a way which you'll say we'll have to replace, fix this line because it's so badly cracked, or do you just kind of watch to see how much it's the infiltration and inflow is?
So that area is, it's one of the oldest areas that has infrastructure in it, and a lot of it is in decent shape, and some of it is cracked and all that stuff. Giving a basis line for the first videoing we did 7-8 years ago in that area, we could kind of track it and see how bad it's deteriorating or failing. Also, when their crew is out jetting, they can determine if they're getting a lot of sand on their pullback, more roots, just kind of debris type stuff, piece of pipe. That'll kind of determine, hey, we need to look at this. It needs to get fixed. Something needs to happen, and so on and so on.
Okay. In our current capital improvement plan that associated with this year's budget, we have three major utilities projects. Two of them are sewer projects. So one is replacement of a significant portion of the sewer line in Beachcomber Sandalwood, and then the other is Main Street Atascadero for replacement to reduce the amount of INI into the system. So we'll start pre-design work this summer, move on to the design, environmental review, and probably construction following that in about 18 months.
And the primary driver is preventing of sanitary sewer overflows, is that right?
Also reducing INI.
Okay.
Inflow and infiltration,
So it's the stormwater that makes its way into the sanitary sewer collection system.
Okay. And then, so I guess the other question regarding the funding, this has its own source of funds. It's not dependent upon the general fund, Mike.
No, it's in the wastewater fund, so maintenance operation is funded by rates.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Tori, and I think you had a question on fog, which I think starts on page 55.
Sorry
I cut you off earlier, but go ahead.
That's fine. My question about the fog was more kind of just a general interest question about sort of the volume of fog-related blockages that you might have here in Morro Bay. So it's not really about the management plan. I would just simply, my comments about the management plan is that we accept it as it is and to recommend recertifying the plan.
Okay, any questions, Jan?
Just a small one, just a little question. Does Cayucas work with you on this for the line that they're sort of jointly that we use together? Do they have to participate in?
No, this is just our plan for our mains and our facilities.
So from where it starts with just what we own. Okay.
Correct.
Then the other question is, are there still JPA meetings going on? Because it was mentioned here that you still have routine JPA meetings with Cayucas.
There is a joint powers agreement. We haven't met in a few years.
That's what I am.
We probably will meet sometime in the near future to discuss how we dissolve/modify the JPA.
Okay, thank you.
Cayucas still requires their force main to our plant for the discharge, is that right?
Yes. Their force main breaks to gravity at Mindoro-ish or further this way?
It breaks gravity technically around Sequoia Island area.
Okay.
After they put in a slip line.
So they extended their force main a little bit further south, and then it's a gravity line into the treatment plant.
And they're responsible for that maintenance?
They're responsible for maintenance of that.
Okay.
Minor quick, too. Real quick, and there's more proofreading. Appendix C, in my particular book, there's no divider for the Appendix C. And then the first attachment, A, says September 2013 newsletter. And then they have a city, instead of that, there's a city manager's update in there that seems, it's touching to the heart, but I'm not quite sure it's a part of this report or supposed
to be. Robbie notices too. There's a page.
Oh, okay. So it's just a typo.
Yeah, it's
kind
been
of
inserted
thing.
And it's correct online now.
Oh, okay. And the only personally, I've seen these plans before down Solvang and other areas, and it's a requirement of the state that you do this stuff. And it's well written. It covers all the bases that you're trying to cover with this. It's more of a regulatory document that you're required to do, and I'm happy with it as it sits. I do have a personal question, though, on the fog. And it's not the fog system. It's the fact you're in a town where I'd say half the businesses sell fish and chips, which means they have deep fat fryers. Do you guys actually have problems at the plant with an excess of oils and fats? I've never worked in a city that had this much oil floating around in the restaurants, so to speak. Is it a problem, actually, or are they doing a good job of containing it with the grease traps and everything else going on?
Yeah, so we work well with a lot of the restaurant owners, and we've
so you're not seeing it at the plant, at the head works or anything?
No.
Or the lift station, sometimes they'll tend to.
Yeah, we do see it. It's just a creature of its own deal.
You're able to handle
but
it,
yeah,
basically.
We can handle it, and with this monitoring and inspections, it has drastically reduced the amount of.
Yeah, because I mean, I've seen where grease hangs on the actual, in the lift stations, the different sensors to kick on, kick off the pumps and stuff. Do you have those issues going on here sometimes?
We do have a little grease that hangs on.
Okay, but not bad. Okay.
Yeah, no, not bad. And we keep a good handle on that, keeping it down.
Thank you, Rob. It's Robbie, right?
Yeah,
Robbie. Thank you.
Okay, Christian?
No, I'm good with the document.
Okay. I did have a couple questions. Some of them have been touched on. Like on page 29, we were talking about the goal of to clean the collection mains on a two-year cycle. How close is that to reality? I mean, this management plan is, you know, states all the things that we really want to do, but what's the reality of something like that?
So we, when we combined divisions, it got a little lag because we did a lot of training, in-house training between different employees, but we've actually gotten ahead of schedule on that. And but we do that, and then also the enhanced stuff, the hot spots.
Okay, so meeting the goals is...
Yes, definitely meeting the goals.
Is good. Okay. Let's see. On page 30, on the roots, talks about the root treatment. What and how is applied, you know, how is the root treatment done, and what is it that's being used?
So the root treatment, we get done about once a year, about 30 to... say 35,000 feet. We come in, it's about a 4-5 day process. And what it is, it's a chemical they use and it creates a foam. They inject it into the line from one manhole to the next. And it stays there and kills off the root over a 3-month period. And then after that, we come through and clean it. And we've got a nice pipe.
What does it do to the trees or things that it's coming from? It kills it inside the pipeline.
Yeah, it what it does, it just burns it back. It doesn't do anything to the tree or anything like that.
Okay.
And what does it do to the water that's going through the pipeline?
They collect.
Looks like a bunch of soaps, soap suds. But this product that they use, it doesn't hurt the treatment plant or anything like that.
So it flows through. You don't pick it up with the Vactor system or something like that.
Yeah, when they inject it as a foam, it sticks to the pipe.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Okay. On let's see, page 36. When we talk about the lift stations and the generators, what is a trash pump? It says trash pump used to bypass for prolonged periods when a lift station is being worked on. Staff can operate a trash pump to bypass the lift stations.
Yeah, so a trash pump is basically it's an engine-driven pump that can take some solids. So the one we have, it's a 6-inch inlet, 6-inch outlet. And it'll handle about 3.5-inch solids.
Okay. Reason I ask some of these questions is because, you know, PG&E is talking about the potential of shutting, you know, everybody down for extended periods of time. And if we're knocked out, we have generators on each of the lift stations, and you have this bypass trash pump. I don't know whether you only have the one or whether that's something that if it has to be incorporated at more than one location if we're doing extended periods. And it also talks about, you know, calling out someone to pump the material, but I figure all the septic tanks are going to be taken by everybody else around this, you know, in the lines, you know, the cities around. So I'm just curious, what are we doing with this new information that there pretty much are going to be, you know, long periods of shutdown. Are we going to be ready for that?
I'll add a little bit. We're still working with PG&E on that and on the length of time that their warning period that they're giving us before, because it will typically would happen due to a heat event somewhere perhaps in the Los Padres National Forest where a transmission line might cross, where they would shut down that transmission line that gives power to the coast. And it may take them a few days to complete all their inspections before they get power back up again. So our diesel generators, for the most part, will provide that emergency operations. The trash pump is really for if a pump breaks or we need to bypass around a lift station. So some of the things that we've talked about, especially with our partners in the fire department and PD, is after 5 days, where are we going to get, and where is every other city going to get fuel from? Mm-hmm. If there's no electricity to pump it out of the underground storage tanks.
Yeah.
So it's a work in progress, and PG&E and the county are going to have a kind of an emergency operations workshop next week to discuss that with the agencies.
Were our fuel tanks removed that used to be out in the service yard?
Yes, we don't operate fuel tanks anymore.
Okay.
I think it might be fair to note, too, a trash pump is a lift station pump. A lift station pump can pass the solids the same way a trash pump can. So you have a diesel generator at each of the locations, so it's only if one of them breaks down in that time that you truly need the trash pump.
And these trash pumps are not electric-driven, they're engine-driven
right.
pumps.
And then there's also businesses that provide pumping services, too.
Yeah, if they aren't all being called out at the same
yeah,
time.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the crunch.
I'm just stating the fact that to buy 20 trash pumps, I don't know if that helped this situation.
Okay, and then the next question on page 42, the categories of the sanitary sewer overflows, SSOs. How do we determine the volume if it's less than 1,000? And that seems to be the cutoff. Just basically, how do we determine the volume of any of the spills or anything like that?
We determine that with a calculation. As it's getting cleaned up, typically one guy they'll start marking out how far it went, what it was, the depth, how fast they can see it moving, and they can take a time. Let's just say take a leaf, put it in the flow, see it trickling, time it. You get your rate, end point, whatnot. So it's just a calculation.
Okay. And let's see, already asked about the JPA meetings that aren't happening. they're not, this report doesn't have to go through them since they're, as partners in our sewer system management, they don't have to sign off on this or have input on this?
Yeah, that's correct. So they have their own plan. This plan is separate from them.
Okay. And just one little minor thing back in the codes section. I don't think it had a page number, but it's code 13.12.21. B, I think, or is that 218 maybe? Anyway, it talks about, it still refers to our bi-monthly utility bill. I think that's been a long time since we've had bi-monthly, let's see, where are we here?
And that's a quote directly out of our Muni code, so we obviously need to change our municipal code.
Yes. I was on the Municipal Code Review Update Committee in the 90s, and I think it was pointed out at that time, too. Okay. Thank you very much. It's an excellent report, very informative. Like my partner said, it's very interesting. You get to see all of the ins and outs, and I'm glad to see that we are, you know, we have such a good management plan for the city that we've been working on for the last 10, 15 years and updating it on this regular basis. So any other questions before we... Okay, so would you like an action on this to...
Didn't call for one. It didn't call
staff for recommendations. One. Okay, it doesn't... We don't need to take an action on it. Is that correct, Rob?
That is correct, but we, if you wanted to make a motion to forward this on to council, we would take that.
I'd make a motion to recommend the recertification of the sewer system management plan.
Is there a second?
I second.
John seconds it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. Then our next item on the agenda is the PG&E LED light street light retrofit.
And I'll take this one since I think Mike is down in Southern California at a training, so he was unable to present this one. This item is to, as most people know, most of the streetlights in Morro Bay, with the exception of five at the roundabout and a few in the downtown, the green ones, are owned and maintained by PG&E. A couple years ago, PG&E updated all the Cobra Head, or the conventional streetlights that kind of hang over the street, with LED fixtures, and they've offered that, and that program was just for those Cobra Head streetlights. Now they're offering it up for the more decorative streetlights that are down on the Embarcadero and in the Cloisters area. To upgrade those to LEDs. By upgrading those to LEDs, once the kind of the capital costs are paid off, we will have a savings on our electrical bills by a little over $4,000 a year. And seeing if there's anything else in here that you want to highlight. I guess that's it. We are looking for discussion on whether we want to participate in this LED retrofit for the Embarcadero and Cloisters area to convert the remaining lights from high-pressure sodium to LED. So that's 136 more fixtures. And that completes my kind of staff report.
Okay. And we'll start with Jan. Do you have any questions on this?
There were parts of this short little report that I read that made me just have to go back and reread. Like the very first sentence says there are 136 PG&E owned and maintained decorative streetlights. And in the next paragraph, it says subsequent additions to the system have increased the total streetlight count to 626.
So there's a total of 626 streetlights in Morro Bay.
But only
136 are decorative streetlights.
Oh, okay. So those are the only ones we're talking about,
yes.
The decorative streetlights.
The conventional Cobra Heads were converted in 2016 from high-pressure sodium to LED.
And those are the ones up on North Main? No.
All throughout the city.
Okay. So now they're talking about they'll keep the same shape as the lights that are down. On
the same decorative shape. Fixture, but change the lighting type from high-pressure sodium to LED.
I have nothing, no objection to that, as I think the LED, for lots of reasons, would be better, but they're so dim. They just, of course, for the people who like to see the natural night sky, that's better, but I just, the ones, so that's my only concern, is that they're so much dimmer, but then there, in those areas, there are more street lighting from stores.
Right.
So you might not notice the dimness of the LED because you have the business lights.
Yeah, so lighting is a balancing act. Over-lighting, not only does it pollute the night sky, but it makes intense light pools that make it hard to see when you're in between streetlights also. So you want enough street light so that you can see, but not enough so that you're blinded.
Okay. Okay, I understand that. And then this $4,400 to be offset, the cost. Does this go back into
the general fund?
The general fund.
Yes. So, well, except for the cloisters. So they are an assessment district who pays their own energy costs. So a small portion of it would go into the cloisters assessment district.
Okay. There's a nominal incremental facility charge, IFC. It says in the conclusion that they will install the LED fixtures on all remaining decorative lamps with a nominal IFC to be terminated later. Is that just the cost of...
The cost to install those. And then PG&E takes that energy savings cost to pay off. So we have no money out of pocket.
Okay.
It's paid for through energy savings. Once the capital costs are paid off, then we receive that energy savings.
Okay. It helped hearing it out loud. Thank you.
Okay. Real quick, it bothers me personally, the light levels in this town on the streets, at least where I live, and I'm sure it's the same throughout pretty much. Are you talking there'll be less foot candles on the ground as a result of the LED being changed out, or are you going to add additional heads to compensate for the fact that the LEDs aren't putting as much light out?
The LEDs will put as much, the same amount of light out
on the ground
as the existing
foot candles on the ground.
Yeah.
I want to be clear on this because, you know, they'll always talk about LEDs. This is like a 35 or 50-watt bulb, and it's a 6-watt bulb. I guess what I want to make sure is we don't lose anything light-wise on the ground as a result of this.
Actually, LED, the color temperature is a higher color temperature. We don't see all the energy output from high-pressure sodium.
Okay.
You'll be able to... It's more in our range that we can actually see.
Well, what are they, the 5,000 Kelvin type? Is that what
I think they're a little lower than that.
Oh, okay.
5,000 would be a bit...
It's a daylight bulb.
Too white.
Or 3,000 is a warm glow. What I'm trying to just figure out is at the end of the day, you know, I see a lot of people tripping around this town, too, between... You know, the fact of low light and certain, and I'm lucky. I'm on Piney Way where there's a few more light bulbs than, you know, a lot of other streets in this town. I just want to make sure we're not, as a result, the trade-off is less light on the ground. That's all I'm trying to figure out, Rob.
No, we should have the same amount of light, just for a lower energy cost, and the color temperature will be more in the visible range.
Oh, okay. Okie doke. Thanks.
Christian?
Nope. I'm good with it.
Okay, Tori, John?
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. I had a question about how long do we... So we don't know, do we have a rough idea what the facility cost is going to be?
Not at this time, no. PG&E would calculate that.
When does the extra $4,000 a year show up?
So the payback on the existing... lighting happened 3 years after they are installed. So this year we started achieving that cost saving. So it's a three-year payback. And so then for replacements, we don't pay any additional charge. There's no facility charges if they have to relamp due to a failure or a lamp. Eventually, they will burn out.
Yeah. So and the $4,000 is what we're going to see from this?
From this portion.
How much has the savings been for the other?
I didn't get that information.
Okay. And I'm sure Jennifer would love to know any changes in ongoing costs, which she can squeeze another dollar or two out.
Our total electrical street lighting cost is about $100,000 a year.
So it'd be in the neighborhood of $20,000 a year.
Probably something around those lines.
Okay. All right. Stu, anything?
So once this is over and everything is all paid off, then we're going to see a great savings in our yearly electrical bill. Is that correct?
I wouldn't say a great savings. We'll see some savings. So like I said, our total electrical bill is about $100,000 a year. It will probably be in the order of magnitude of, you know, $20,000 to $25,000 less per year citywide for converting to electrical, to LEDs, excuse me.
Now, does PG&E maintain that equipment, those lights?
Yes, PG&E owns and maintains all the street lighting equipment in the city.
So if they
except for this, like I said five, but there's six at the roundabout and 11 in the downtown that the city maintains.
Now, they are going bankrupt. They've gone bankrupt. Is that going to affect their liability in doing this? Do you know?
I see their trucks still on the street maintaining their facilities. The bankruptcy protection, I believe, is to I'm going to editorialize maybe a little bit here, is to protect them against big claims up in Northern California.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I don't really have any questions either. I would like to see all the streetlights retrofitted so that they aren't on a dark light sensor that they would just turn off at 1 o'clock in the morning and turn back on at 6 in the morning, because we don't really need all that light out there during those hours. But that's for another discussion.
We might want to wait until maybe 2 a.m.
Okay. Nah. 2:15? Okay, so I guess the board agrees with the staff's recommendation to participate in this program.
Yes, and we'll provide updates to the board as this moves forward with more cost information.
Okay, thank you. Jan, you had something?
Could I push in two other questions?
Sure.
What is all that, speaking of PG&E, what are they doing up on North Main Street where they have all those trucks and...
Oh, just north of the bike park?
Yeah.
They are testing. They own and maintain the gas lines that used to serve the power plant, and they are selling that asset to Southern California Gas Company. So they have to test their integrity. So they're doing a water test on there. So they're filling the pipes with water and going to be pressurizing them and make sure that they're good pipes.
Didn't you tell us that at the last meeting?
Yes.
I thought so.
Oh, no, and I also think I got it. But another thing, they put up new poles for wires, those straight poles.
So they're replacing also, it's not part of the same project. They're replacing their tower, their kind of superstructure towers with monopoles. Eventually, all of them will be replaced.
So eventually the tower things will be coming down.
Yes, but there'll still be 300 kilovolt power lines.
But there. Yeah, but you go by now and you see all those poles, and I'm thinking, you know, the towers, the monopoles, and everything. It's like, And then one other little question. That corner, that property on the corner of Radcliffe and Main Street, there's a sidewalk being put in there. Is that the private owner's proper thing, or is the state doing it? Or what, who's doing
the private property owner to get those storage units there was in his use permit to allow those to exist there, had to do frontage improvements. He did that on Radcliffe first. Mm-hmm. The portion that's on the corner and going up Main is within Caltrans has right away there. So he needed a Caltrans encroachment permit, and he asked to delay that while he went through the encroachment permit process. So now he has his Caltrans encroachment permit and is installing sidewalk for that little piece on his corner.
Is Caltrans doing the work, or is it
no,
privately?
No, he's doing the work. He got a permit to. Caltrans is doing the inspection.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Future agenda items, I believe our next meeting is going to be the tour. Is that correct?
And Janine will be polling the Recreation Commission and this board to determine what is the best date for everybody. We're going to try to start it a little bit earlier so we don't. I think one year we started it late and ended up getting rather chilly and dark by the time we finished the.
Oh, that's Morro Bay.
So we're looking at probably like a 4 p.m. start time.
When does the what's their regular meeting?
I believe it's the third Thursday.
Okay.
Are you going to be pushing it, you think, later in the month or earlier in the month?
Probably about either during where the regular Rec Commission is or the regular PWAB. We'll try those 2 dates. So
I'm good for the if it's. I could do Wednesday or Thursday. I'm going to be gone Friday.
So it'll be either a Wednesday or a Thursday.
But I have seen all the parks,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
It's down
yeah.
And everything.
It will be a Wednesday or Thursday. Recreation meets on Thursdays. We meet on Wednesdays. So it'll be either their regular meeting date on a Thursday or ours on a Wednesday.
And they're both in that same week.
You.
Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody, looks like you...
I just got a comment. The Rock parking lot, as you know, you're down there, and so am I, and so are many other people. Perhaps there's some sort of a plan we can develop for that parking lot, maybe even getting a band of Indians to do something with the Rock and pay us part of the revenue. I don't know. There's many things to talk about, but if you go down to Pismo and take a look at what they've done to their parking lot, it's a whole lot better than ours, and that's a dirty, muddy mess out there at times. And I'd like to see something done to that, or at least a discussion.
That's a natural calming device, traffic calming device.
Yes.
Okay. I think somewhere along the line we'll probably be able to discuss the pace.
Yes. We can bring that back, and probably it should make its way through the council goal-setting sessions at some point in time to see whether it is
a
priority for the
city. About that. Yeah. Let's see. So we will be, if there's no other questions or comments, we'll adjourn to either the 17th or the 18th of July, depending on when the special meeting with the parks is.
Pending the quorum checks and checking on folks' availability.
And I will not be available either of those days that week, so that's one down. Jan gets to lead this one again.
Nor will I be available.
And John won't be available.
You'll miss the future little pocket park down on the Embarcadero.
Oh,
yes. Okay.
Where we get to point to the parking lot and show where it might be.
Yeah.
Is the tour in lieu of a...
Of a regular...
It's in lieu of a regular meeting.
Yeah.
We'll meet probably at the Public Works office. That's where we have in the past.
Yeah, we'll have the trolley there, and we'll board the trolley. We'll try not to talk business in between stops, because AGP typically will go along and try to film the discussion at each of the facilities that we stop at. If anybody has any favorite spots that they want to visit, you can send me an email and let me know, and we'll add it to the list.
You know, if I could ask real quick, is there any chance we could get out to where the new WRF is going to be?
I'll check.
Is that a problem? Or?
We just have to let the property owner know ahead of time.
It might be worth seeing.
Yeah.
Any other? Jen, you have a comment?
The bocce ball thing, is that park, is that going to be finished by then so we can try it out?
Likely not going to be finished since council asked us to look at what properties could be liquidated, and that's a property that could be liquidated by the city, sold.
So that means there might won't be a bocce ball?
I wouldn't say won't. That'll be a council discussion, and at their special meeting that they'll attend, we'll get direction on, you know, which properties they want us to look at. We did this a few years ago, looked at what properties could be sold, and we came up with, of the 83 or so that we own, three properties that could be sold. The lot at the Cloisters, which is still working its way through the coastal development process at Coastal Commission. A small lot in Mindoro, which was sold and built on, and the lot next to Limos, which Mr. Ciano put his sign up at, and then we decided that we still needed that.
I was wondering about that.
Okay, with that, I will move for adjournment. Thank you very much.
There's on that property on San Jacinto Coral, there's a yellow sign.
Planning sign,
yeah. So.
They're trying to make it into six houses.
Yeah, I heard that. But it seems like it's making its way through. You said, it's making its way through.
It's supposed to have been a fire department center at one time.
I know that, yeah. And I was at the city council meeting when they were talking about it. About it being, what are they calling it, a six-unit subdivision, and some of the people were complaining that were living in it. I'm thinking, what are they complaining about? Is it the word subdivision? Because it was the term subdivision? Because,
six lots.
Yeah, because it's already all built up.
Except that one.
So I was surprised to see people protesting.
Yeah, it gets to be pretty hard for someone to buy a pound and a half acres, a single house on.
Right.